This show is sponsored by Hulu Plus. Hulu Plus lets you binge on thousands of hit shows anytime, anywhere on your TV, PC, smartphone, or tablet. Support this podcast and get an extended free trial of Hulu Plus when you go to HuluPlus.com/Joey. That's HuluPlus.com/Joey. And by DollarShaveClub.com. Get high-quality razors sent to your door each and every month for a fraction of what you pay at retail. Now, go to DollarShaveClub.com/church. That's DollarShaveClub.com/church. Or just go to JoeyDiaz.net and click on the Dollar Shave Club banner. And a big thanks to EscapePodTank.com. They have all of your sensory deprivation tank needs. They're already going to save you thousands. But if you mention Joey Diaz, the church of what's happening now, anything like that, they're going to save you an extra $250 off.
$250.
Oh shit, it's that motherfucking time, Monday, March 30th, the day the devil was buried and fucked in the ass at sea. It's a beautiful day to be alive, cocksuckers. Get up, salute the flag, grab your heart. It's that type of motherfucking day here. Goal it up, bitches. Goal that motherfucker up. What's the story, baby?
Nothing.
Fucking Johnny Smooth. What's over there story? Looking good. Listen. Looking good. You got a new fucking hairdo, LaRue. Look at you.
I got to do like every 3 weeks.
Sure. You get hair on your neck. I saw fucking. You got to shave the fucking
I get
neck.
Hair everywhere.
You got to go to an old school barber with the fucking razor. Oh, I love razor. That, man. You just got to put the fucking thing on your neck and shave it.
I don't know if it's a Jewish thing or I don't know, but...
You're half caveman.
Anyone who goes bald, it's everywhere but the top of my head.
How fucked up is
that?
I'm
going
to go bald. I find hair on the pillow.
Yeah, but you're supposed to. You're 50-something.
That's right. You know what I'm saying?
But it's all my whole family. The worst is the back hair. I got a thing to shave the back hair because it's fucking gross.
Dollar Shave Club. You got to put something together. You got to give them a call. Say, look.
They got to do something because with the wood razor, when he used to do with that, it can't go all the way down
your
back.
You got to get the stick. You got to get the stick with the hand on. You ever see that scratching hand? You have a hand with a stick on it and you scratch your back with the stick.
Okay.
I used to have one for my asshole, like a little stick, and you just fucking work it. From the back, if you're a little too fat, you're mathematically inclined. You can't scratch your ass. You can't wipe your muffler. It's Monday, cocksuckers. A beautiful day to be alive. What the fuck? Fort Lauderdale was great. Thank you. If you live in the Fort Lauderdale area, South Miami, whatever the fuck you're from, if you came to the shows last week and I had a great time. I've always had this special thing with Florida, kind of, sort of, where I don't know what the fuck it is. Like, when I get there first, I'm like, I'm in fucking Florida. I'm in a swamp, bitch.
Yeah.
And then it just builds up, and it gets beautiful, and I really had a great time. It's a great fucking club, and that Hard Rock Casino, it's pretty interesting, man. It's pretty interesting that you don't really need to go to Vegas to lose your fucking mind no more. The reason why Vegas is dead, I thought it was because of the economy.
Mm-hmm.
It's not really because of the economy, because these different cities, I don't know which ones they exactly are, like Atlantic City, you know, whatever, they have casinos. And some of these casinos, I mean, when I was a kid and I went to Atlantic City, I'm like, fuck this. This does not compare with Vegas. This is not, I don't even know why they did this. But now, 20 years later, I'm starting to see it.
Mm-hmm.
I'm very fortunate. I get to go with Joe to the fights in Vegas, you know, once or twice a year. So I always observe. You got to observe where you're at, and you see the growth, and you see if there's cranes, and you see if there's construction going on. So when I pull into, like, you know, and then when you go to a casino, I mean, sometimes you go to a casino, and the casino's job is to have everything there you're going to need.
Mm-hmm.
Everything. They even tell you in the fucking bathroom, you need anything, come down, a comb, a douche, a tampon, whatever the fuck you need, they'll give you. You know, they have shopping. Whether it's expensive or not, they have shopping at the casinos, you know? They have fine dining, and they also have pizzas, and they have food courts. I don't know. I always get confused. I think for the two fights, they either go at the Mandalay Bay Casino or the other casino, and there's one of the casinos that has a food court. So you don't drop $80 a meal while you're there, and you got to stand online. You can just go get a quick slice of pizza at the food court. They have a movie theater. The MGM Grand, I think that's the
okay. That's
the one. I get them confused, so please don't quote me on this. But I went to the Hard Rock last week, so I'm at the Hard Rock and whatever. You go down the stairs, you got the Hard Rock restaurant, you got a food court, pizza, deli, you know, Cuban, Chinese. You've got a spa, you've got a pool, you've got shopping, you've got Hard Rock memorabilia. Then you walk outside and they have a complete different world. They have more restaurants, a little fancier, swankier type restaurants. They have nightlife. They had bongos. They had, you know, toy stores. They had all this shit. I mean, I walked around every day. And every day I saw what they were doing. And mm-hmm. I kept saying, now I get it. The 24-hour kitchen I ate at, let me tell you something, was superb for what I was getting. I was very blown away. The first night I got there, I was starving. I just got two eggs and an oatmeal at 11 o'clock at night. I don't know why. I just didn't feel like nothing. You know, if they fuck up the eggs and the oatmeal, then there's nothing reason to eat
it. Yeah.
And I had it, and the eggs were delicious. The oatmeal was delicious. I think one of the days I had a chopped salad. It was fucking delicious, you know. But the one day, you know, let me tell you something. I live in California, and sometimes I forget. I forget, and I don't forget. I don't forget. I always try to keep it as old-fashioned as I could be. And I know that for some people, a lot of people who listen to the podcast, they're a little younger, and I have different fucking issues, and I have issues with, you know. I hate when I go to buy something
mm-hmm.
at any business. And I'm saying this, and I know I'm going to get some backlash for it from people. I hate when I go to fucking buy something, and there's somebody behind the counter who doesn't understand the language. It bothers me a little bit. It pisses me the fuck off, and I don't get mad at them. They just come to America. They're looking to strive. I get mad at the people that hire them, because these are the people that are going to be talking to your customers. So if people are going to come in here and they do not understand what the fuck you're talking about. Number two, if you're going to hire somebody, make them knowledgeable of the foods and how they're served and how they're prepared. You know, a lot of people look at businesses as investments. I've talked about this with the Northridge Dairy Queen. I went up to, me and my wife moved to the Valley 4 or 5 years ago before Mercy was even a thought. And one night we're on a date night and we go, oh, let's go to Dairy Queen. And we both got Dairy Queen and it was fucking horrific.
Really?
It was horrific. And we looked at the people who owned it and absolutely they were from another country. I'm not going to mention, I'm not going to be racially insensitive here. It doesn't matter. My point is that they were fucking somewhere else and they didn't know a Dairy Queen was. They bought a Dairy Queen because of an investment.
Mm-hmm.
So when we went in there and we were looking for a Slurpee, whatever, they're like, we don't know what the fuck it is. You know those great Mr. Misties? With the vanilla ice cream. And okay. I always liked that. They didn't know, you know. And I got upset. And I see it sometimes. Me and my wife go to get spaghetti at this fucking horrific place in Burbank. And last time we went in there, I had to say something to my wife. Because I'm like, I don't fuck around with these people. They don't know what you're talking about. They don't know how to serve spaghetti. They're from another fucking country. They don't even eat spaghetti in their own fucking culture. So they don't know how to serve it. Nobody's ever taught them how to serve it. How to fucking the presentation. You know, whether it has this or not on it. What the fuck? So you got to tell them, Terry. So I'm sitting there the other day, and I'm in the East Coast. Now, one thing I love is old Jews. I love old Jews that let you know how the fuck it is, because we don't have this here. I do not have this freedom and this honesty in Los Angeles and anything that you do. I'm in the entertainment business, so the people I deal with can't make eye contact. They won't return your calls. They rather not return a call than give you a no. That is the weirdest thing that I've ever encountered. If I go in and do something for you, instead of you going, Joey, you were not right for the part. They'll avoid contact. Yeah. They'll avoid with everything altogether. So maybe somewhere down the line, they'll bump into you with a job. And you know, it's just creepy shit. Creepy fucking human being shit. Humans don't treat each other like this shit. So they don't look, you know, it's just, it's a fucking, you see these people and you know they're fucking cunts. You know in their daily lives, they're fucking pieces of shit. But they try to keep it together. Those people I spot. I spot those people right the fuck off when they try to keep it together, because I know they can't keep it together for that long. Eventually, their true fucking colors will come out. Eventually, within fucking minutes, they'll say something. You go, oh, I fucking get it now. So that does not happen here. We don't see that here. We do not see people live through their emotions here at all. Their emotion is, people even go to church in this town as a social activity. People will switch religions just to be at a social, oh my God, you know, Jim Norton comes to this church. That's the reason. People are fucking disgusting out here. So the other day I'm in this food court in fucking South Florida, whatever, Fort Lauderdale at the Hard Rock. And nothing looks good. You know, when you walk from window to window and nothing fucking looks good. I want to go to the deli. I'm not in the mood for a fucking corned beef or pastrami sandwich. I go to the Cuban spot, everything didn't look that good, you know, and some fucking Swahilian was serving. I go to the fucking Chinese thing, that shit looked disgusting. And I didn't want to sit in a restaurant again. I didn't want a fucking omelet. I didn't want a Philly cheesesteak. I didn't want none of that shit. So I'm sitting there and I'm going from window to window to see what could yell out at me, what screamed my name. And I look over and I see this little Jewish guy, probably like Lee's dad, like that age.
That's all. Maybe a little older. That's all South Florida is.
That's all South Florida is. He's got sandals on. He's got no yarmulke, but his hair's a fucked up. He doesn't have a yarmulke on, but I could tell when I saw him, this is my man right here. This is this is Jew Central.
So, right, how often does this happen that you see some guy and you're like, I gotta stay here?
I just know. I just have a feeling. I feel other people that are like me sometimes. Yeah. So I'm looking at this guy and I'm like, oh, let me just see what this motherfucker's gonna do. Maybe he's gonna order something that's interesting. And he goes, excuse me. Do you work here, sir? He tells this kid. And I don't know what nationality this kid is. I know he's not American. He's not Spanish. He's not Brazilian. He's something else. I don't know. And he goes to the kid, excuse me, do you work here? And he's kind of nice, the guy. He's opening up very nice. Hi, how are you? He goes, you work here, kid? Yeah, he goes, listen, I need a nice sandwich, all right? He goes, I want this on this with a little bit of this. And he goes, and on top of that, I want some liver. Right? Just like that, I want some liver. And the guy goes, huh? He goes, I want liver. Liver. You know liver. You got liver? It's around here somewhere. He can't find it, the guy. He's like, liver. Liver. You know liver. And the guy's like, liver? Liver, liver. And I'm standing right there. And I'm about to. And the guy looks at me like, can you believe this shit? And he looks back at the fucking guy and he goes, liver, liver. You put it on a sandwich, you know, liver. You don't know what liver is? And the guy's like, liver, liver. Like he keeps saying it. I do not know. Liver, you fuck. Liver. And the guy's trying to keep it together. And I can see his face getting red. He's like 5 foot 2. And he's like, liver. I told you liver. Don't you know how to say fucking liver? Who hired you? What the? And all of a sudden, in the middle of his rage, he goes, where's your manager? Maybe that fucking guy speak English. And he turns. And the door swings open. Like, you couldn't write this. The door swings open. And a guy comes out with a dot in a fucking turban. I mean, and he looks at him and he goes, liver. I'm looking for fucking liver. Because the guy was old. Now he's getting upset. He's liver. I want liver on my sandwich. And the guy's like, liver. And he goes, like, you don't know either? What the fuck? What? Can somebody please hire somebody that's a fucking American? And he says something in this thing. And as he pulls away, he looks at me. We make eye contact. And he goes, tell me about it. I said to him, tell me about it. Now, finally, somebody thinks like me. I go, tell me about it. He goes, go fuck yourself too. And he just walks away from me. 9 out of 10, I would have told the old man to go fuck himself. But I haven't been told to go fuck myself in such a long time like that, that I kind of liked it. I was like, I love this fucking old guy. I was like, yes, there's finally old fucking Jews in the world. He told me to fuck off. That's what he said. I go, hey, tell me about it. You know, because he yelled. Once the Hindu came out with the turban, he fucking lost it. He looked at him like, I was looking for an American and they throw this fucking guy out here. This is worse than Sprint. Because Sprint always throws a fucking Hindu at you at the end. Oh. Like, you get them call Sprint, bro. They'll throw an American at you. And then to throw this fucking full court press on you, they'll throw a Hindu at you and your world is done. Your world is done. Hello, hello, what the fuck? I'm telling you, I did not call Cambodia.
And the thing is, I know these people because that's all. Okay, so for people who don't know, Fort Lauderdale and Boca Raton, that area, everyone from New York, New Jersey, Boston, that's all that is. All the Jews go down there when they're about 70, 60, something like that. So this casino probably had a deli, a New York delicatessen. New York
delicatessen.
But that's just because that's, I mean, my dad goes to one every week. But they probably didn't have. They probably had turkey and ham. And
that's what they had. They had turkey, ham, corned beef. Yeah. No brisket.
No brisket.
That's why he was mad too.
And they had so a liver is this like it's like it's only disgusting. Jews like it.
You know, Mitzi really Shaw used to send me to the store for tongue.
Oh yeah.
Tongue. Her, me, and Ari. She used to send us. Ask Ari next time we
talk. I've never done tongue, but it's chopped liver isn't that bad. It's pretty fucking strong to put on a sandwich.
You've had it.
I have it occasionally. You can only really have a couple bites. I couldn't imagine smearing it on a sandwich like cream cheese. But this guy wanted it, and he was making his own sandwich, and that poor guy was like, all I know is turkey, ham, roast beef, and what kind of cheese you want to put on it.
But then again, you know, I don't know. I just feel sometimes, and listen, you got to give everybody an equal opportunity to employ.
And I'm surprised the guy started out nice, because all the old Jews I know like that, they start out yelling. Like, they start out already angry.
He was angry, but he was keeping it controlled. I could tell he was angry when he walked up.
Yeah.
Like, he was looking for something to fuck with him, so he could run back to his wife and yell at him or some shit.
At the penny slots. That's the thing about casinos, and I love gambling. It's just, it's in me. But whenever I go to a casino like that, it's just like when you see like the hordes of old people just like with the penny slots with just buckets of pennies. I'm like, Jesus.
Let me tell you what I did see this weekend. And what? It goes to show you. I saw, and I never saw it in Vegas. They told me they have it in Vegas. I've never seen it in Vegas. You can play War.
War? Oh, the card game.
The card game.
Yeah.
You've seen that before?
I don't know if I've seen it in Vegas.
I've never seen it in Vegas. The guy goes, it's very popular. I didn't see one person playing War all fucking weekend. But when I went and asked the guy on Saturday, I go, so this is just like regular War? And he goes, yeah, $10 a card. I was like, oof. That's not me. I'm a Cuban Jew. I work too hard to fucking gamble $10 a card. But he goes, it's very popular. So I watched the table. Every time I walked by, there was never not one person I saw playing War.
Probably all blackjack, roulette, and blackjack. Craps.
I think they don't have craps. They don't have craps or roulette.
Really?
In Vegas. But I did see like a machine where it's virtual blackjack. A chick is in a computer. Chick, and she's playing cards.
You can't do that. That's just going to rip you off right away. When it's a machine, they can rig it. At least when it's cards, you have some sort of a chance.
So a couple of weeks ago, right, since like you said, you opened up the conversation, a lot of people moved down from the East Coast to whatever. When you and I did the documentary, we went to a corner one day, and I looked at a house. And I said to you, that's the house that started my movement. Like, that was the final straw in my decision to leave. I got accused of robbing a house. Mm-hmm. My friend called a couple of weeks ago, Anthony Veneri. Anthony Veneri is running for Freehold, but he's replacing Thomas Ligio, a good, good guy. Tommy Ligio is a good guy, the father. We'll get to this later. When I went to, a couple of weeks ago, I got an email, a Facebook from a friend of mine, a girl that, freshman year, I fucking went to freshman class, and I was friends with a kid named Michael DeGuomi, who came to the Stress Factory, who him and I were very tight growing up.
Okay.
And he had a friend named Roseanne DiAgostino. And Roseanne came over. We were all, Diaz, DiAgostino, DeGuomi, were all in the same homeroom in high school. And she needed a locker. And I said to her, Roseanne, my freshman year, I mean, I didn't know nobody. I go, Roseanne, if you want, you can share lockers with me. So okay. She shared lockers with me. And it was great. I put my books in there. I didn't really. Then she had her friend. Her friend needed a locker. So she goes, can my Maria Della Donna, I think that was her name. She's no longer with us. She died in high school like 2 years later. And so me and Roseanne always stayed friends. To strengthen the bond, Roseanne had a brother that I was very tight with. Me and him took a hit of acid one time and got on a bus in New York and took it all the way down to the Jersey Shore and played AC/DC on a fucking big one of those ghetto blasters. And the bus driver kept stopping, going, next time you put that thing on, we're going to throw you off the bus. 10 minutes in, we put the fucking Highway to Hell on. The guy would stop the bus. I had 1,000 laughs with DiAgostino. DiAgostino was crazy when I was kids. So I get a call, I get an email from her on Facebook a couple weeks ago saying, hey, I see that you're coming to Fort Lauderdale. I'm going to come see you. I'm going to tell the girls. And I didn't know what she was talking about. And she said these two names. And there were two girls I hung out with. One of them I had an encounter with. I was romantically with her for a while when we were kids. And the other one I was just dear friends with. And we all grew up together. We were all in this circle later on. They came into my life from 16 to 20. Two or something like that. We were always together. And then in the winter of 84, I was fucked up, guys. I was just in bad shape. I broke away from society like in June. I was in love with a girl and we were dating, and then we broke up and she started dating her old boyfriend, and I was looking for the girl to save me. Sometimes you're not looking for a relationship. You're looking for a woman to save me. This was my ticket into, you know, having a house and all this shit. You know, I, in the back of my mind, I thought if I hooked up with her, you know, so whatever happened. So I went, and then cocaine was pretty relevant. It was everywhere. So I got hooked on the cocaine. I was trying to get a job, hold a job in New York, and it was just falling apart. I couldn't make it to my job at 5 o'clock. You know, somebody said that I did the Eddie Bravo podcast last night, and people were hitting Lee like, how's he going to wake up in the morning? Bitch, if I tell you I'm going to be there, I'm going to be there in the morning, especially for you motherfuckers. But in these days, I didn't think that way. I didn't give a fuck about anybody or their time schedule or what it meant, you know. I had no responsibility. I didn't claim any. And in that process, they hung out with this other girl named Joanne Ligio. That was a very sweet girl. And I became friendly with her and the mother and the brothers. And one day I went to Cali. After I screwed my uncle over, the one that did the podcast.
Yeah.
After I tried to rob him at gunpoint, when I got off the plane, I got a call. I called somebody and they go, hey, Joanne's looking for you. So I called Joanne, and she goes, my mom said if you ever need a place to sleep, you could sleep here. So I immediately went over there. God forbid I wouldn't pass up an opportunity to sleep in somebody's house for free and mooch their fucking food in those days, you know? So I wouldn't have to cover that shit. I would just have to money to snort coke. God forbid. So I stayed with them. I think I moved in with them October, like the end of October around Halloween.
Mm-hmm.
And I stayed with them till like the first week of December. And I got to tell you, people, it was 6 weeks that I didn't make any effort to change my life. You know, sometimes somebody puts you on a couch and they say, Joey, this is you. Open the refrigerator. It's all you. All I want from you is to wash your dishes and do me a favor, bro. Get up in the morning and go get a job. Go get a job to help yourself out. So in 6 to 8 weeks, you get an apartment here. You can stay here for free. I'm not going to charge you. You've done it with people.
Mm-hmm.
You can stay here for free. I don't want nothing from you. All I want you to do is wake up at 8, keep this clean. I don't want no fucking, you know, don't put drama in my life. But most important, if I'm going to give you this opportunity, 2 or 3 months to live rent-free, get a job.
Mm-hmm.
You think I got a job? Fuck no. I wanted to be Johnny Coke dealer. I wanted to be Johnny Coke dealer and Johnny Mafioso and sell coke and burn people. So one day, like December 12th, I never forget the date, she comes to me and she goes, you got to go. Just out of the blue. She goes, I'm throwing you out. You haven't made any effort to fucking do anything with your life, and you haven't stopped snorting coke, and da, da, da. And it was true. I'm not here to tell nobody I wasn't. And I took my little army bag. In those days, I had an army bag filled with clothes and a couple pictures, and I fucking just lived on the streets. That was when the last 3 weeks of December, when I basically just lived on the streets. Now, you talk about the East Coast being cold. I lived on the streets. I took my luggage to a friend's house, and I would pick through clothes at night and change and take a shower wherever I could. And it was just a horrible living. It was a horrible way of living. So I hit rock bottom December 31st, 1984. I robbed this kid, Joel. I went to a hotel, and it snowed a lot. It snowed like 2 feet of snow, and I knew they were going to come get me. I had like $2,000 of their money, and I called my teacher, Mr. Terranova, that's called the podcast, and he picked me up, and I left that area forever. And that was it. I went up to Mr. T's, and I stayed clean. And about 3 weeks in, I get a call. I call a friend of mine, they're like, dog, what the fuck did you do? And I go, what are you talking about? And they go, the cops aren't looking for you, but somebody robbed Ligio's house. And they know it's you, man. And I go, dog, are you fucking kidding me? I haven't even, at that time when the Ligio house had been robbed, I was never even in that area no more. I owed $20,000. My godfather was looking to kill me. My stepfather was looking to kill me. God knows who else was looking to fucking put a bullet in my fucking leg. Trust me, I wasn't going to go back to West New York, North Bergen, Hoboken, none of those fucking spots. So he tells me this, and he's like, bro, you robbed the house. And I fucking called another friend of mine, and they're like, yeah, we got the call last night when they were at the football dinner. Somebody broke into the house and took all the jewelry and shit. Now, the other part of the story was that Joanne Ligio's mother was a degenerate card gambler. And I knew, because I knew people in Hoboken, I knew different people, that she owed money.
Okay.
She owed money. And she had been borrowing money from her daughter's college fund. I knew all these things. That I knew them. You know, the daughter didn't know. The husband didn't know. This was before he became freeholder. This was when he was down and out. He had lost his job at Pepsi. So I get this call. You know, you robbed the house. And I'm like, I didn't rob no fucking house. You know? But it didn't matter. Listen, I had everything against me. I had no real alibi. You know, T was like, he's here with me. So what did I do? I called the chief of police in North Bergen, who I knew dearly. I hung out with his son. And I said, Mr. B, you know, I've known you a long time. I've eaten at your house. Listen, I've done a lot of bad things. I robbed this. I did this. You know that. And he laughed. I go, but this thing I didn't do. If you want me to come down and give a statement or get fingerprinted or whatever. And he goes, listen, something ain't right, but I'll get back to you later. So I guess that they broke in, but there was no real break-in. There was no, that's why she thought it was me, because there was a key. I never really had a key to the fucking house. I just knocked and they let me in, or I had the back door was open because the two boys. So they accused me of robbing the fucking house. So this is all over the place now, and I'm trying to fight back. I'm trying to call everybody.
Now, why, for someone who's done all that stuff, why did it bother you so much?
It bothered me because I didn't rob it. At that time, everything that got robbed was me.
Mm-hmm.
Every time. And then a week later, they go, oh, no, it was the sister. And I get fucking, you know, somebody robbed somebody. And then I would get a call. Hey, bro, did you hear what happened downtown? They broke into whatever's house. And then a week later, it was the three Puerto Ricans down the corner. So I would always get vintage-ized, whatever.
Okay.
Vindicated.
So even though you were doing it, when you didn't do it, you're like, it wasn't me.
There was a point where everything that somebody did, it went back to me. Mm-hmm. If I was even in that fucking area. And sometimes I was responsible for it.
Yeah.
And sometimes I wasn't. For some reason, guys, this one really bothered me. This was at the tail end of a part of my life when I was in bad shape. And when she threw me out, it hurt me because I thought she was my friend. I knew a lot of shit about the mother, like I'm telling you right now. I knew a lot of shit about the mother, and I thought we were good friends. And I understood her throwing me out of the house. Hey, I understood that. I wasn't mad about that at all. This went on, and it ate away at me. It ate away at me that she thought I robbed the house. You know, and I knew the truth. I knew that it was an insurance scam for her to get the cash back, and... I knew a lot of little things. You know, she had pawned the jewelry. She was getting her jewelry estimated. So I knew something was in the horizon, you know. And mm-hmm. I got to tell you, it really bothered me. But it made me who I am today. So this went on. This rumor went on. And I called one of the girls, not Roseanne DiAgostino. This is 85. I called one of the girls. And her and I remained friends for a while, even though she was tight with Joanne Leggio.
Okay.
This girl, Tasia, and I remained friends for a while. And then Tasia got into her own hassles. Her and her boyfriend killed a couple driving. It was fucking crazy. Fuck. It was dreaded. They were drunk. Tasia got vindicated, but the boyfriend ended up going to jail. And I left. No, right before, I didn't leave yet. And her and I were very tight, this girl Tasia, but as time went on, our relationship, and it was because of the Joanne thing. Now, the other girl, who I was romantically at one time with, Lisa, I called her one day. Me and my buddy were thinking of taking a vacation. I called her one day and I go, hey, me and my buddy are thinking of taking a vacation. I want you to sell me the package. And she put me on hold and then she picked up the phone. She goes, listen, I got to tell you something. I really don't want to do this for you. I really don't ever want to talk to you again. I can't believe you robbed Joanne's house. She goes, this is the end, last conversation we'll ever have. And that really destroyed me.
Mm-hmm.
Because we weren't romantically involved then, but I considered her a friend. Not, in a way, not really. You know, I knew, I knew what it was. I knew what time it was. So eventually, within time, they both stopped talking to me.
Mm-hmm.
And that really bothered me. And today, I could look you in the eye. I mean, we've discussed a lot of things on this podcast. I didn't rob that fucking house. It wasn't even in my realm at that time. I was trying to get out. I was trying to really, like, that's it. I had gotten away with murder.
Yeah.
So why would I want to fucking go back, you know? So when Roseanne hit me up a few weeks ago, she told me, she goes, I want to come to your show. My husband, I go, no problem. I go, but listen, I'm dirty. You know, I just, guys, want you to know. I know the style of comedy you like because she always posts what comedians she goes to see.
Okay.
So on when I was down this weekend, I didn't even think about it. But when I hit her back with the message, she hit me back that she was going to invite those two girls.
Okay.
Those two girls all live in the same neighborhood with other people from my hometown.
Wow.
So I told her, and I never heard back from her. You know, she probably went to those two girls and said, he's coming. And they go, are you fucking kidding me? Don't you remember what he did? Da, 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 da. Did it bother me, bro? A little bit. It bothered me. If you know anything about me, it really didn't bother me. But it just struck me wild that I had the relationship I had with this girl. Even if she went to them and they told her that, I thought that this girl would at least go, you know what? You guys don't want to go? Let me go. Me and him had a friendship at one time. But I mm-hmm. guess, and like I said, the other girl that had the locker died in a car accident. I remember we all went to the wake and I was very tight. So it just goes to show you that...
It never came out that it was the mom doing... Like, it never came out...
I never really wanted to attack it. At that point, you know, I was living... This happened January of 85. I left New Jersey in June of 85. By that time, she had gotten her check. Then I bumped into her one day in 93. I went home.
Mm-hmm.
I bumped into her at a political function, but the people I were with were throwing heat. She couldn't say nothing to me.
Yeah.
They looked at me. They gave me dirty looks, but there was nothing. I gave dirty looks back. At that time, I didn't give a fuck. But I would have gone up to her, looked her in the face, and said, I know what you did.
Mm-hmm.
It wasn't me. I know what you did, and I'm not mad at you. You know, if I would have robbed the fucking house, I would have got arrested for it.
Yeah.
If it would have really been me, if they would have had witnesses and proof, and I would have sold the jewelry, where'd the jewelry go? You know what I'm saying? At those days, you could track jewelry still. You could track it. Mm-hmm. Where'd the jewelry go? As soon as they put an alert out, the feds or the cops send fucking paperwork to all those. They fax paperwork to all those jewelry stores. And if they're looking for 50,000 worth of jewelry, like they said they robbed.
Yeah.
She said she had like 50,000 worth of jewelry, which she really had. She probably did have. So, but that really, but that pain that that brought me fueled me. It fueled me. And if we remember when we shot the documentary, we shot it. I had that piece in there.
Yeah.
I never aired it because I didn't want it to, I didn't want to make the documentary negative. I didn't want to show you. At first, when I had the plans to shoot the documentary, our plans were to take you to the places I robbed and stuff. I didn't want to show you the bad things. I wanted to show you the good things. And that's why I did that. I had that piece in there. Remember, you shot me.
Mm-hmm.
You shot it right in front of the house. And I go, this is the house I got accused of robbing, blah, blah, blah. And today I really don't give a fuck about them, you know. I feel bad that we don't talk. I feel bad that they fed me at one time, and I don't have a relationship with them. I'm sure they see the articles they put in my hometown paper about me, and I don't know how they feel or whatever, but I really don't give a fuck. My, that made me, that gave me the fuel, that accuse, to be honest with you. You know, it's like having a jar of mayonnaise, and you're trying to open it, and you can't open it, and you're working it for an hour, and then your grandmother comes in who's got arthritis in her fingers, and she goes, and she cracks the fucking can.
Yeah.
That situation was the catalyst. It was responsible for setting me out in the world.
Yeah.
Because that's what made me want to prove that I wasn't that person.
Mm-hmm.
So I keep that theft close to my heart, that accusation, because it fueled my rage.
Oh, yeah, man, I can see
it. It fueled my fire. It really fueled who the fuck I was, because I didn't care about, I robbed a lot of shit. I'm not here to tell you I did not rob shit. I was a petty fucking piece of shit thief. But that, I didn't rob. I had a little bit more class than to rob somebody who had helped me at that time. You know, they weren't involved with drugs. They weren't heavies. They didn't do nothing like that. So they were out of my range.
Yeah.
You know, all those people that helped me were always safe. You know, that's why the people, you know, Lubes and Ascalises and the Volanos, those people were my brothers. They stuck with me through thick and thin. In those days, I'm the same animal today. If you don't stick with me through thick and thin, I don't want you around, you know. It was interesting because I worked with two comedians
Fort
Lauderdale this week. And one of the guys I knew from L.A. And, you know, when I used to do the podcast with Alicia, she used to have this fucking friend, this Jeff... I don't know what his fucking name was. He books Montreal or some shit now. You know, he books Montreal. Jeff, I don't know what his fucking name is. And it's funny because this kid said to me, he goes, you know, Joey, man, I'm watching you on stage and everything's working out. And he goes, years ago, fuck, you had a lot of people that were really down on you. And he goes, this guy especially. And I remember him, Felicia, he was at Felicia's one time. And I shook his hand, but I knew that, first of all, if the guy's a gay guy, that he needs a push. You know those guys that are fucking flaming inside, but they just need a push. Like, so they need a guy to grab him by the neck and go, tonight you're going to suck my cock, and I'm going to set you. What's that word when you break a woman out? When you, what's the pimp say? I busted her out and shit. Like, I turned her out.
Oh, yeah.
That's what he needs, a guy to turn him out.
Okay.
And it's funny, he booked, I forget, Jeff, whatever. I think Stanhope had a problem with him, too, because the guy used to charge classes to teach stand-up, and Stanhope went after him. And it's funny that this kid came up to me. He goes, you know who really used to, every time I'd see him, he'd say, stay away from Diaz. He's trouble. He's no good, you know. And type of shit like that bothers me a little bit.
Yeah.
You know? Because these are the people that talk to the mainstream people. And I know that half of these fucking morons are a bunch of, you know, they don't like dealing with me, half of them, because I tell them the truth.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I tell them how I feel, and that's not what they want to hear. They want you, oh, my God, it's such a pleasure to be. No, it's not a pleasure, because I know you don't give a fuck about me. You have to do this because you have to do this shit.
Mm-hmm.
But it's so funny how these people, it's tough to live your life, you know, and you make your own bed, man. I made my own fucking bed. I'm not here tapping out or crying or, you know, I got a bunch of fucking things this week from people. You know, things ain't going my way. Then you got to work a little fucking harder, by guy. You got to goal it up. Goal that motherfucker up on a Monday. Goal it up and go for it, you know. But I've done a lot of things. And one of my goals was always to, listen, you're not going to overcome. You're not going to change people's minds. You're never going to. Once a person has a perception of you or whatever, you're not going to change their mind. The only thing you could do is keep pushing forward. And eventually, even if they don't like you, they gotta look at you and go, that motherfucker's a savage. You know, maybe I don't like this, but his character is spot on. And that's all I always wanted to be. I always knew to redeem myself from what I had done all those years. My character was it. And I always had character. I always had fucking character. If not, I would have robbed them.
Mm-hmm.
I always had character. If not, I would have robbed them right there at fucking gunpoint. But that's what I always strive for, to build my character so they could, somebody could say, and I know half these people don't fucking like me, these comic people. And you know what? I really don't give a fuck. That's the reason why I'm here. When I walk in the room, I walk in the room with my cock in my fucking hand. I don't give a fuck. I'm not scared of none of these motherfuckers. And that's why, you know, this podcast is ha-ha, hee-hee sometimes. But on fucking Monday mornings, I come in here fueled up. And it's just to let you know that, you know what, man? Who gives a fuck? Somebody this morning hit me up. I don't want to go to my job, or I don't like it. Should I quit? And I go, you can't quit your fucking job. But you know what? Go in there and give it a shot. If somebody don't like you, having a problem with your boss, go in there and let them know you're fucking better than they are. That's the only way they're going to give you the fucking props. And even if they don't like you, I don't give a fuck. I don't want to go to your house to watch TV. I don't want to go eat with you or hang out with you. Fuck you. But you will fucking respect me, and you will fucking respect what I do.
Mm-hmm.
And you will respect how I fucking compose myself and how I handle myself. And that's all you want from people. I don't give a fuck. I don't want no thank yous or no hugs or nothing. I just want people to know this guy's a hard worker. He works hard. He does what he says he's going to do. And he fucking comes through, and that's the most important thing, man.
Well, did you hear what happened? It's interesting you brought this up. Did you hear what happened in football this weekend?
No.
So the Philadelphia Eagles released a wide receiver named Deshaun Jackson. Deshaun Jackson, right. So, and they released him, right, like the day an article came out saying that he hangs out with gang members. He grew up in Compton. And what he's saying is, what all like, the police have come out and said is, when you live in a place like that, you're going to grow up and you're going to know people who end up like that. Yeah. So they released him. He didn't do anything. It's not like Aaron Hernandez who killed somebody. They released him, and they said he had some issues, he didn't get along with the coaches or whatever, but they released him before he did anything, and he went out saying, like, I'm not a bad person, and it's kind of like what you went through a little bit. Like, what would that feel like? Like, if like a comedy club or your agent now is like, he hangs out with bad people or he did this in his past, and then it kind of affects you. It's kind of like what happened to that UFC fighter a little bit, but he did something. So Deshaun,
I'm gonna tell you something. Yeah. It hurts. I'm not gonna lie to you. It hurts for a minute.
Mm-hmm.
It hurts for a level. It hurts for as long as you let it hurt. Okay, people, always remember that. This shit's going to hurt for as long as you had let it hurt you. A situation affects you. It's going to affect you for as long as you let it affect you. Listen to my fucking words, because I've lived with this every fucking year. Every fucking day, whether when I was Spanish and I first moved to North Bergen. In every level, you know, my insecurities weren't fucking man-made. I'm not a guy who's going to tell you that I haven't had opportunities because I'm Spanish. That's bullshit. I've never even looked at that. I've never even categorized myself as that. I categorize myself as a fucking man. I know I got to go out there and get something every day. But when you hear something negative about yourself, or something that somebody's taken out of perspective, or something that somebody has made a bad call on you,
mm-hmm.
It hurts if you let it hurt for a minute. Then you sit there, you reflect, you grab your cock, and you go, you know what? Fuck this bitch. This is the gasoline that goes in my fucking tank.
Yeah.
Okay? That's how I look at it. When somebody says something, like I told you one day, 9 out of 10, most people go up to people and go, hey, I heard you said that. I don't say nothing. Because if somebody's going to say something like that about you, knowing the efforts that you do, they're saying it from an insecure place, or they're jealous, or they don't understand. I don't even like that word, jealous, but they don't like it or whatever. You know what? If they're that weak, they know you're going to fuck them up.
Mm-hmm.
That, you know. I mean, in my world, when I get that shit, it hurts for 10 seconds. And if I didn't tell you, I'm lying to you. It hurts. It hurts for a minute. It might hurt for a day. It might hurt. But then something takes over you and goes, you know what? I'll take that person and wipe my fucking ass with them. It's shit in my ass. You know when you take that first shit, how you take that toilet paper and wipe your fucking ass? That's what I'll do with that fucking head as their tongue is scraping my asshole. And they taste the shit from my fucking ass. That's how you have to think about those fucking people. And you don't say nothing to them. You don't even give them the time of day. You let them live in their life. You let them live their life like they know what the fuck they're talking about. And meanwhile, you're digging, you're moving fucking straight. Because listen, bro, it's like the fucking man setting off in Apocalypse Now. I'm in this fucking hotel hanging here, and Charlie's in the bush getting fucking stronger. I've always been Charlie in the bush getting fucking stronger. So you could sit there with your little fucking Gentile buddies, ha ha ha, and Saturday Night Live and hanging out at the improv and try to be cool and put whoever the fuck you want down. But meanwhile, motherfucker, Uncle Joey, a.k.a. Charlie, that bitch is in the bush, motherfucker, with a gun and a fucking scope and a fucking, a bag full of fucking bullets. I want to be around. It's Monday. March fucking 30th, the day the devil was buried at sea. Anybody say something about you, you don't feel good, fuck them. It only hurts for a fucking minute, and then you tell them, suck my dick, bitch. Out of respect, Tony Bennett on a fucking Monday, cocksuckers.
I wanna be around to
pick up those motherfucking pieces. Who gives a fuck?
When somebody breaks your heart. Somebody twice as smart as I. A somebody who will swear to be true as you used to do with me. Who'll leave you to learn
that misery loves company.
So it's crazy. I didn't even feel the earthquakes this weekend. I don't know what it was, but fucking.
You were fucking.
No, I wasn't.
You were eating that ass like a fucking Mexican soldier.
Beforehand, yeah, but. Fuck, I didn't bring you the corn. I'll bring you the corn tomorrow.
What made you think of the corn? That would open up my sinuses?
No, because you said Mexican. Well, we were before. But no, not during. We didn't feel either one. And I called Terry because I knew you were in Florida. I was like, fuck.
Yeah, people called me right away and said, call home, that there was an earthquake. So that's the type of people I'm fucking involved with. You want me to tell you why I feel good today?
Why?
Because I took that on at 180.
Okay, that one.
I took that shit before and after the fucking plane, man. They sent me a big box of it. And I tell you what, I'm tired. You know, I'm a little tired today. I'm going to take it easy. I don't have a big day.
Mm-hmm.
So I thought I had to go to 11 to 12. I thought I had to go to the library with my daughter. They do like a read story time. I was going to go down there with her and see what's going on. Torture some motherfuckers. Read some books and shit.
They had that in elementary school. Like you could come in and the parents would read a book. And my dad did it once and he took it really serious because he was on the radio. So he listened with his big radio voice. I can definitely see going to kindergarten reading some stories to some kids.
It's a mommy and me group on Mondays and Wednesdays, but it's not it's not for the next 2 weeks, so it's on Wednesdays. So
okay.
That's why I was going to do the podcast Monday, Wednesday at 11, but I got to go to storybook fucking reading time, so that's what the fuck it is. But that's why I felt good. I could tell that I never take Alpha Brain before I go on a plane ride. But the 180, I take a little thing right there, right on the plane. As soon as I get on, the guy goes, you want water? Boom. I open up the package, dump it in there, drink it. And then when the plane lands, I do another one. And I'm fucking good. Like, I never really have jet lag. Yesterday, I slept for 2 hours, but it was because I was tired. You know, I went to bed at fucking 2 and got up at 5. So.
And you went through a period a few months ago where you're getting a lot of ear things and you were getting sick for a while. So, you might, like, you've been taking that for, like, on the plane.
Cause, yeah.
Because you've been, like, what, 6-7 weeks in a row now or close to it?
Oh, no, I don't fuck around. But so. it was very weird. I'm taking a lot better care. I know how to do the road now a lot better. So, there's little precautions.
You take the immune. I take
the Shroom Tech. The other one, not the sport, but I take the other one. The immune. Yeah. So, you know, you get on a plane 6-7 hours, you gotta protect yourself. I heard they make this. I was talking to a buddy of mine from Australia last night. He says they make this thing that you buy at the airport and you drink it every hour or something like that for your body. It puts a lot of vitamins in your body. You know, when you fly, there's radiation on planes. There's so many fucking things on planes. And I fly twice a week, so you have to take a little fucking care of yourself, people. And that's what that's the word of the day. Take care of yourself. It only hurts as long as you let it fucking hurt. You know what I'm saying?
It's crazy because, like, and I would love the Patriots to grab him, but they won't do it because of Aaron Hernandez. And at first, when they brought it up, I'm like, yeah, I guess I can see, like, after what happened, you would let him go just so if anything happened. But, like, the article, it's kind of where it's kind of why newspapers are going down. The article didn't have any proof, it just said he hangs out with people who are in that. But it's like that shouldn't be illegal, that shouldn't be a reason for you to lose your job. And it's Mark Cuban, the owner of the Mavericks. he came out a week or two ago and he said that in like 10 years the NFL is going to go downhill because they're doing a whole nother night of football now. It's like Wednesday nights too, and then more games on Thursdays. And you know it might be fucking true. He said that like when people get too greedy, bad things happen. So it's kind of interesting.
So they're going to start Wednesday night football?
I don't know about Wednesday. They definitely added more Thursday night games. And like now CBS is covering them. And pretty soon it's going to be every night of the week. I think it's some Wednesday night games.
Now this kid that got Deshaun Jackson, mm-hmm. was he a rookie last year?
No, he was like 4 years in. He had his best year last year.
Okay, so after his best year, so they cut him or they released him because mm-hmm. of he doesn't get along with the coaches. Maybe he has a chip on his shoulder.
Yeah.
But because he has gang acquaintances. Well, he's from Southwest.
Yeah, he's from Compton. It's not that he's in a gang. It's that his friends who we grew up with, and I wouldn't have even realized it, but when I go down to drop Hall off, in those neighborhoods, there's fucking gangs. And it's just some of the people who live there are very nice old people, and some of the people are gangs. And it's just when you grow up in those areas, you're going to have friends you go to school with that are in the gangs. That's what they said, and it's
Listen, when I went back to fucking the stress factory, I realized I had some friends that were heavy duty myself.
Yeah.
That over the years, this week in Florida, some guy came up to me and he goes, "I'm your friend's partner in the book business."
Jesus.
You know, a kid I grew up with. And I knew he had a partner. And the guy goes, "My name is this, and I'm his partner. I've been with him for 20 years now, and he couldn't come, but he sends his love. I'm down here." So, you know, when I went to the stress factory, I saw a couple motherfuckers I've been in high school with that now, you know, back then they were doing little things, but now,
mm-hmm.
and a couple of them told me, man, they were like, "Bro, we got your back. You need anything. You know, fuck. You want to perform here, you want to do this, we could take care of you." So
yeah.
I took their cards and their phone numbers, and man, this is who I grew up with. This is who the fuck I am.
You know? You're not going to abandon them now?
No, I don't give a fuck. I'm going to fucking abandon them. They never abandoned me.
Yeah.
One guy I saw that I did 1,000 things with, and I always knew who he was. That's why I did the things with him, because I knew I would never get in fucking trouble. So
we got a call coming in.
All right. It's my little brother, John Evan.
How's it going?
Good, man. I'm happy you woke up to do this for us again. John Evan on the line. One of my fucking coaches who I love dearly, a jiu-jitsu fucking savage. He has a YouTube page and he has a breakdown page, and we're going to talk about Eddie Bravo. How you doing today, Mr. Evan?
Oh, doing well. You guys get up early for this show, huh?
Yeah, we get up early, man. We want to get to you first. We want your information out there first, John Evan. Yep. You know what I'm saying? Yep.
That's great. It's a good way to wake up.
Nah, I woke up. I went to bed at like 12, so I was tired when I woke up at 4:30. But you got to do what you got to do, John Evan. Fuck it.
No, for sure.
You know, great. People. You know, I get emails every week, and some weeks I get emails from people that, you know, things aren't going well for them. They've been, and I ask them, you know, do you get up early? Do you try a little harder? Do you? And this is it. This is, you get up a little early some days. You're right. You know, and the whole day's in front of you. So.
Yeah,
that's it, John Evan.
Great.
John Evan, I'm watching these fights the other night, and I thought about you the whole night when I was watching Metamorphosis 3. I felt awesome. Like you were right next to me, you know, and because you taught me some stuff, and I didn't know a lot of the high level stuff I was seeing, watching, but that's why I have you on today to break it down, and we'll break down Eddie's because that was the main one people are still talking about today. A couple weeks ago, you and I were doing something. You were teaching me a few moves. And you mentioned to me something that Kenny Florian mentioned the other day. He goes, you know, Eddie's known for his rubber guard and this, but his real world is his grappling and his side control.
Yeah, and his half guard, too.
Right, the half guard. I'm sorry, not side control, his half guard. And we saw it the other night. Break it down for me, John Evans.
Yeah, I mean, if any of you haven't seen that Metamorphosis event, I highly recommend you watch it. I mean, it's just not often you get to see high-level grappling put on into such a nice production. Like, typically, you can go to the Worlds, and if you're there in person, it's really something to see. A lot of the people come up from Brazil, and some of them chant at each other, and it's crazy, but if you're there live, you're not going to see it with any kind of commentary. If you watch the live stream, you can see some commentary, and that's that helps a lot. It helps give context, but unless you do the sport, the commentary has to be really good to give it context, because otherwise I think that's the problem with jiu-jitsu, with sport jiu-jitsu. It's really hard to convey what's going on in the match unless you've seen it before, because there's no way that you can tell, for instance, pressure. Like, there's no way the camera can show that. So, you know, maybe you've got two humongous guys, like, say, like, I don't know, somebody as big as Verdum, who's going to be fighting for the in the UFC, hopefully for the UFC heavyweight title pretty soon. He trains at my gym sometimes under my coach Cabrinha, and he's a humongous person, just very big. And once you're that big, if you put a shoulder on someone's face and have a really strong cross face on them, that can be so much pressure. It feels like your head's going to pop off. But on camera, there's no way to tell that. So you really need good commentary to give it context. And the last couple of Metamorphoses, I didn't think really had that so great. But this time they had Kenny Florian, who commentates for UFC, so he's an old hat at it. And then he also had Jeff Glover, who is one of the best American grapplers and just an all-around good guy too. So the two of them really, I think, helped brought that across to the audience. So you didn't have to be such a jiu-jitsu nerd. You can be kind of more of a casual viewer and still see what was going on. But the match was fantastic. I mean, this one is, it's a rematch. They fought once before, I think, in like 2003. Was it 2003?
I think, yeah. So, ADCCs, right?
Yep, it was an ADCC, so it was Nogi. And that was the big deal about this fight. Hoyler was, if you don't know who he was, he is one of the Gracies. He was named, I think, by Gracie Mag, which is a huge jiu-jitsu publication. It's been around for a long time. He was named as the best grappler of the 90s, I think, by his peers and by the magazine, maybe. They took a vote, and he was the one. Best grappler of the 90s. So a big deal. And he's a smaller guy, too, you know, one of the much smaller weight classes, but known also for his passing, which typically you don't see that at the smaller weight classes. A lot of people play guard more, so they're on the bottom more. But he has very good, also a very good guard, but very good passing too, especially for the weight class. Really technical, good athlete on top of it. And he went into ADCC where he was fighting Nogi, and Eddie Bravo caught him in a triangle and beat him. And a lot of people said, oh, it was a fluke. You know, like, it's not going to happen again. I don't think either of them competed after that. I might be wrong, but I'm pretty sure that neither of them ever competed again after that. So a lot of things left to speculation. People saying that Eddie was making his career out of this one fight. He just got lucky and all of this. And, you know, it was really, it was an interesting match to make. And everybody wanted to see them rematch, but they never did. And now years and years and years later, they finally did, and it was a fantastic match. Really, really good. Unfortunately, spoiler alert, if you haven't seen it yet, it went the distance. So, because it's supposed to be submission only, but there was a 20-minute time limit. So, you know, still, you can argue it either way. But, I mean, I think most people that were there, even to the casual fan, they could see that. I mean, one way, if you're not sure who's winning in a grappling match, you can look at who's defending more and who's attacking more. And Hoyler was on top for a lot of the fight. I think for the whole first 5 minutes, he was on top in good passing position, trying to get a knee through the pass, knee through the middle pass to work, but not able to get it to work. And then Eddie was able to utilize his lockdown. And for me, that was kind of like the most surprising and, in a way, the saddest part of it, too, because the lockdown is not just Eddie's move. Eddie kind of popularized it, but it's a common jiu-jitsu move, and Hoyler seemed to have no answer for it. He didn't know how to get out of it. He wasn't doing the right stuff. He was straightening his leg most of the time, which is the opposite of what you want to do. and he looked a little lost. And because of that, he got swept a few times. He swept back and he stayed on top. But in the end, he got put into a couple of different compromising positions where he was nearly in a calf crusher and then also nearly in a neck crank. And he was in danger of being put into a twister, which is also a neck crank. And, you know, if you have to look at it that way, he was defending. He was never putting Eddie in danger of being submitted. So I would definitely have to give this fight to Eddie. And I'm not biased either way. I really have no affiliation with either of those two camps. So it was just it was a good fight. And I would have loved to have seen it with no time limit, for sure.
Just go till somebody passes out?
Yeah, I think so. You know, even though you could argue that that favors Hoyler, because he seemed to be the better athlete out of the two, even though Eddie was still pushing pretty strong towards the end. That's the only real way to leave it to get a definitive answer. It's submission only. The only problem with submission only is that when you do it with no time limits, most matches, sure, they're going to end in 5 minutes. They're going to end in 10, maybe 20, sometimes 30, but every once in a while, you'll get that match that goes like an hour and a half long, and it's just unwatchable for the casual spectator, and even for the hardcore spectator. If it's especially if it's more of a stalling game, if it's like an hour and a half, it's hard to make time in your day for that, and especially if there's like five more matches. And how do you schedule that too if you're an event organizer? So that's kind of the conundrum with sport jiu-jitsu right now. These rules were, in my opinion, much better than rules for, say, like the IBJJF with the Worlds, where they give you points for sweeping, takedowns, you know, passing guard, all of that. Mounts. It doesn't matter. There's no point. No points. Just you submit or you don't. So that way it becomes much more pure jiu-jitsu, I believe. But also then you run into that no time limit issue. So it can be hard to run a tournament that way.
I really saw one other thing that night that I think a lot of people saw, unless you're crazy. There's something there. I could watch one of these once a month. I would pay to see these live. I would go down. I would have paid the $100 to go down there that night. I think they're very interesting, John Evan. I think they're a little more like the way they did this show compared to like a tournament that I've been to. Like the time I only been to one with you at GMAC that day. GMAC. But I liked how they did it. I could see this on pay-per-view once a month. I think that there's a market. You know what? So what? You got kicked out of the UFC. You're a fucking black belt in jiu-jitsu. Why just open up a school? You know, you could jiu-jitsu-wise till you're fucking 60. You know that, right, John Evan? Especially if you've been doing it for 20 years at 40 years.
Absolutely. That's the beauty of jiu-jitsu. And, you know, you could see that here. And people wanted to see, people paid money. And it was the main event to see these two guys that were nearly 40, right? I think Coiler's...
Or I'm 48, sorry, and Eddie's 43. That's reality.
Yeah, exactly.
That's fucking reality.
Eddie's nearly 50, right?
Yeah, Coiler? 48 years old.
And, you know, they're not like, these are not athletes in their prime. And watching these two guys, and first of all, too, what amazing athletes for being well into their 40s, you know, especially for Hoyler, and being able to go 20 minutes in a match, which are being videotaped. And both of the, you can't imagine the pressure on these guys. Like, if you've never competed before, and, you know, it's a completely different thing. But also, when you get to that level, Eddie Bravo owns that the 10th planet system. Like, if you see a 10th planet out there, it's associated with Eddie Bravo. A lot of pro fighters in the UFC come to him. You know, Hoyler Gracie being named, he's a Gracie for one, so it's a lot of pressure right there. Like, you can't be a Gracie and be bad at jiu-jitsu. It's, you know, it's just not accepted. And also being named the best fighter of the 90s, he's a legend. He's the son of Helio Gracie. It goes on and on. So much pressure. And you have all these students and everyone that looks up to you. And you get out there and you haven't competed in 10 years. And, you know, you have an adrenaline dump and you still not being athletes in their prime, they went out there and they put it on the line, and they just really went for it over 20 minutes and had an amazing showing. I thought it was awesome, and that's so hard to do for, you know, the average 20-year-old would have a really hard time with that, but they pushed the pace the whole time. It was an exciting fight, which is more than you can say for a lot of fights. And, man, I don't know. I thought it was great.
Like I said, you've been teaching me for the last 9 months, and I watched some stuff that night that was just amazing. I had never even seen before. I don't know what they were doing. You know, one thing I learned from you was patience, John Evan. A couple of weeks ago, we were messing around, and I said to you, you're going to teach me a north-south choke. And I'm fucking 300 pounds, and you're barely 160, and I laid on top of you, and I could hear your fucking ribs crushing. But you're like, no, no, you're okay. And I'm like, what? I love this guy. And you fucking, you know, you had patience. You're like, okay, he's 300 pounds. There's nothing I could do about that. All I could do is keep my composure, breathe, and I'm going to get out of this. And you fucking did this little shrimping shit, and next thing you know, you were out of it. Do you know how long it took Eddie to get that lockdown last night?
It was a while before
it
he
took
could
him
get
five
into
it. Fucking minutes to get the lockdown yeah. last night. So he first got the one hook, he said, the Black Mamba, and then he went for the lockdown, and he goes, it took him 5 minutes to get it. That's patience. And then he spoke yeah. about the yeah. electric chair, how he works on that a lot. But he goes, you know what? He was surprised that Hoyler wasn't prepared for the electric chair, whatever they call that shit. But he yeah. said even then, like he goes, it's a move that you have to, you know, it's steps. He goes, it's steps. And there's one point where Jack, what was the name? Not Kenny Florian, but the other guy was Jeff.
Jeff Glover.
Jeff Glover said that Eddie wasn't known for his cardio, but he was very technical, where Hoyler was more of an athlete.
Yes, that's true. Yeah, it, you know, that fight, it was crazy. Hoyler was in a very good knee through the middle passing position. And the part for me that was a little bit sad was either Hoyler has not updated his game enough since maybe he was last competing, which has been a while, or he just didn't give Eddie the respect that he deserved and didn't study up on him, because that lockdown is pretty common. And anyone that knows Eddie and knows anything about his game, like it's pretty common knowledge that he uses the lockdown a lot, and especially from half guard. Also, I mean, Eddie just jumped right into half guard from the get-go. But Hoyler, I would have loved to have seen him trying to avoid that a little bit. I mean, there's a couple things you don't do in life. You know, you don't tug on Superman's cape, you don't spit in the wind, you don't fight in Eddie Bravo's half guard. You just don't do it. It's not a good idea. And he just allowed him to go right there, and I think maybe he wanted to beat him at his game, but why? You know, I mean, clearly it did not work out, and especially if you're going to fight there, why allow him to get the lockdown? Oh, and why not know how to get out of it? He wasn't doing any of the right stuff. He allowed his knee to get really torqued out, and from there, Eddie Bravo was able to get underneath him. Like you said, he did the electric chair. I think he did it twice. Nearly put him in a weird neck cranking position by grabbing the forearm at one point, and all of the control was based off of that lockdown. And because Hoyler, he wasn't, you know, typically to nerd out a little bit, typically the leg that's caught in the lockdown, you want to bend it, your heel to your butt. You kind of want to turn away from them and then bring it to your butt. And then you can turn back into them and extend the leg, and you leg work around their legs. Or if that doesn't work, you can incorporate your free leg and use that and go kind of down, weave it in between their ankles, and you can straighten everything out and release the lockdown. He wasn't doing any of that, and it was very surprising. And that allowed Eddie to get all of his sweeps and all of his setups for submissions. And then at the end, he got in this horrible calf crusher position. If people aren't really familiar with that, it gets used very legitimately at very high level sport jujitsu, especially no-gi, where, like, say, I think Vitor Oliveira recently, who, if you don't know who he is a GFT fighter, one of the biggest jiu-jitsu camps, And this guy's a beast. He's been tearing through the American circuit lately, even though he's a Brazilian guy. He went to the Nogi Worlds last year and submitted a black belt in tournament with that same submission, where you're in that calf crusher, just pulled the leg down. And it's the only thing with the calf crusher is that some people just do not tap to it. It's, leg locks are a little bit tricky like that, but when it's that, it's just put on that hard the way Eddie had it, and especially with Hoyler's knee being twisted to the side like that, it looked horrible.
It looked horrible.
Yeah, I mean, it was super deep. He must have rubber joints or something.
Well, he said he heard the knee pop at least 6 times, and he kept twisting, and he kept saying, you know, are you okay? Yeah. You know, but you heard what the man said. He goes, he's not going to tap. The only way to tap Hoyler is to choke him. The guy said that during the commentary.
Well, he probably wouldn't tap to that either, but at least he's out, right? I was really surprised because, I mean, even the way that he was fighting the electric chair sweep, when you do the sweep with that lockdown, you torque their knee to the outside. I personally have torn someone's meniscus with that because if they're stubborn and they try to fight back by straightening the knee and not trying to concede the sweep, it can go right on the knee. And I've torn someone's meniscus, and I've seen other people's meniscus torn from the same exact position. So he wasn't fighting, you know, he wasn't fighting that properly either. He was being stubborn with it. The knee was getting torqued really bad, and he was in a horrible position for that calf crusher at the end, like I said. I was shocked to see him stand up at the end and seemingly walk around okay. Like, I thought for sure that it had just blown everything out of that knee. But I don't know. I guess we'll have to hear reports from his camp afterwards. But, I mean, he seemed okay.
You know, it's funny. I did the podcast last night. He goes that, you know, for sure he's definitely got ice on it today, you know. But there's another school of thought to that. John Evan, you're a great jiu-jitsu guy. I mean, anybody I talk to at VMAC, they all go, fuck, John Evan, you know, you're very technical and stuff. But John Evan, you've just been doing jiu-jitsu for 7 years. Can you imagine what you're going to be like at the 20-year mark? What also comes with that 20-year mark is flexibility. It's you know, you could take your elbow to places. I can't take mine, and Lee can't take his. You know, you've been doing the game for a long time. You know your limitations. You know, I mean, it's like the other night I did something on stage. I had to stop to, and when I got off, both comics were like, bro, you heckled, you handled that lady fucking perfectly. It wasn't because I'm better than you are. It's because I've been doing it for fucking 20 years. I'm not better than you. I've just been doing it for 20 years. That's how I looked at that night. That's just one of the things that it means to do jiu-jitsu. You know, if you watch one of the countdowns to Metamorphosis, he stretches. He's a big stretcher. You know, we all stretch our hamstrings and, you know, twist around, but when do we really get deep into our ankle and switch it around? And when do we really do those deep stretches, which is what is needed for jiu-jitsu, if you really think about it, you know? So,
sure, no, definitely.
And he said it. He goes, you know, it's 2014. It's not just going to the jiu-jitsu thing anymore and doing hip escapes and rolling. There's so much more if you want to get that much better. So, you know, the conditioning is great for, you know, all that stuff. I mean, like I said, you could pop my fucking finger, but I know there's jiu-jitsu guys that, you know, they fucking, they're great. You can pull that finger back for hours and nothing happens.
<That's funny. laughs> No, it's true. There's definitely a level of conditioning for flexibility and joints. And just Dean Lister, who actually competed in this too, also talks about it, that you've got like a, it's nearly like a conditioning for submissions. You start to build a tolerance after a while where, you know, not for chokes, because for chokes, if you get choked unconscious more than, you know, a handful of times, then it starts to, your body actually, just like in boxing, when boxers start to get knocked out more than a couple of times, then their chin knows somehow that, oh, okay, well, I can stop all this trauma, and by just putting this person to sleep, then you do that, and then the guy starts passing out real easy. Same thing with chokes. You know, if you get choked out more than a handful of times, then you barely put pressure on the neck and the guy will pass out. But other than that, as far as like joints go, you can start to condition, especially for foot locks, for straight ankle locks. You'll see a lot of the top guys that have been put in a lot of horrible straight ankle locks that would separate the ankle from the leg, or, you know, just tear some of the ligaments down in the foot. And their feet are kind of like flopping all over the place, and there's no expression on their face. They're fine there, and the guy could be in a really terrible, deep belly-down footlock, and the guy's fine because their legs have just been so battered over the years that the feet are, they're just loose and they don't care. So there's definitely a level of conditioning that comes with just training for a long, long time.
It's I'm really happy.
That may have played the factor. So.
No, that definitely was. You know, John, I'm really happy for Eddie. And I could tell in a way that, by the way, you said that Eddie did great, you know, that you're happy in a way also, too. I mean, we're both fans of jiu-jitsu, but I'm really, Eddie's one of those guys that works hard. I mean, do not get me wrong. He's fucking crazy as cat shit. He's crazy as cat shit, you know. But that's what makes Eddie Eddie, and that's what makes his jiu-jitsu. I mean, what makes you wake up one morning and go, you know what? I think I got a way to do this. I think I got a better way than the Gracies. And he's not saying that. He's never said that. Eddie has never, ever said that. He's just said, I have maybe a different way to look at this. That's what I mean to say. I got a different way to look at this. And if you do this, you know, what he was saying was that, you know, if you're going to be fighting in MMA, there's no gi. So why train with the gi, learn all these different things? And I'll tell you, I'm in the same position in my career. He's a come-from-behind type of guy. And he took a lot of chances, and he's got a lot of shit talked about him. I mean, people come up to me and say shit sometimes. When I'm doing comedy, after a comedy show, people come over and go, how can you hang out? You know, let me tell you something, man. That guy's done more for me as far as his values and his way of thinking than a lot of other people have done, you know. And I was just very proud of that. When I watched it, the thing the third time, his fight, I watched it three times. I watched it at the comedy show, I watched it on the plane, and I watched it yesterday. The third time, I was overcome with tears because I know what it's like to have people say shit. And he's always been, you know, proving somebody wrong. And I give him props for that, man. That he just wanted to change. He just had a belief. And I'm sure you have beliefs about jiu-jitsu, John Evan. You're very good at what you do, and I'm sure that you have, you've even taught it. You've even said to me, listen, this is how they teach it at most schools. This is how I teach it. You know, with the one leg, the takedowns you've been teaching that you review on Tuesdays. You know, if you look at the UFC and you look how they do takedowns, you're picking up your head, you're using your back, you're doing a deadlift, and then you teach it this way that it's just push him this way and let his body do the work. You follow?
For sure. I mean, there's a million different ways to skin a cat, and, you know, like you said, motives too. Like, you know, Eddie might be crazy, you know, quote unquote. But I mean, honestly, though, like, who's to say Eddie's any crazier than Hoyler, who lived, ate, slept, and breathed jiu-jitsu for every year of his life. You know, like, that's not a normal life either. So it's just everyone's different, and Eddie, it was great to see him do really well, and I think a lot of people discounted him because he has grown a ton since him and Hoyler last fought. You know, like, I think people forget that he was either a brown belt or a new black belt when they fought.
He was a brown belt.
And yeah, and so much time's passed. He's opened up. He got the whole 10th Planet thing going, and he's got multiple schools and trains with a bunch of top people, and his game's completely different. And I mean, even though he was using a lot of his half-guard stuff in this that he's known for, you know, he's progressed so much. And I think it was people that were a little bit, you know, I mean, on paper, Hoyler is the better athlete and the better competitor because he's done more, he's named the best fighter of the 90s, etc. But you know, people in the know, I think, knew that it was a much bigger question mark about this match because, you know, who's training more and who's grown more. And I think Eddie's definitely grown more because there was more to improve upon with Eddie's game from when they last fought. And, you know, just what kind of shape they're in and how they've updated their games. So I definitely was not expecting a blowout in this match at all. And I think a lot of people that were higher level grapplers or at least closer to the situation knew that it could be a much closer match than what people were giving Eddie credit for. So it was great to see him come out and really do very well against such a top competitor. So
I was very happy.
Hey, John, this is Lee. I have no jiu-jitsu background, and I knew the outcome of the fight before I watched it. And I thought it was interesting, because Joey brought up, like, he could watch this every month. And I thought it was interesting that 4 out of the 6 fights ended in a draw. And in most American sports, there's a winner. So is there a way, like, how do you explain to someone who doesn't know jiu-jitsu that a draw isn't a bad thing? Because, like, it was, when I looked at it, I was like, wow, 4 out of the 6 fights ended with no one winning. But then when you see this fight, you're like, oh, okay, I see what happens. Like, is there a way there could be, like, some sort of overtime where they do points or something like that? But it was surprising to me that 4 out of the 6 fights in a big professional fight, no one won.
Yeah, that's actually a fantastic point that you bring up. And being someone that puts on their own tournaments myself, like, it's a really, honestly, is the biggest issue with sport jiu-jitsu right now. It's what is the best tournament format? And I personally, there's pros and cons to the point system, and there's pros and cons to the submission-only system. I personally don't believe that the current point system that, say, the IBJJF uses, especially with their rule set, is the best system. I really like submission-only, but then you run into that whole time limit issue. Metamoris tried to change it up from the, because this is now the third Metamoris, I believe. Mm-hmm. The first Metamoris was submission only, and then I think they did it just like this one, where it was a draw after a certain amount of time. And then the second one, I don't believe it was no time limit, yeah. But the second one, what they did is they tried to do more of like what you're saying, so they can have the less draws. And what that resulted in was a lot more confusion and a lot worse matches. So even though there was 4 out of 6 matches went the distance, which is not ideal at all, these matches were much more exciting, because in the second one, what they did was they said, okay, 20 minutes submission only, and then at the end of that match, we'll have 3 judges that will just say who's a winner. And absolutely, with those 4 or 6 matches that were on this Metamorphs card that did go the distance, there was pretty much a clear winner and loser in each one of them. But they can't, when they start to incorporate the judging system, then it becomes just the same as point-based. Because what happened was a lot of the competitors were fighting, and they knew, okay, well, we're 10 minutes in, this guy's too hard to submit, and maybe I could make it work if I just went balls out, but I could also lose, you know, like maybe I give up a position or get too tired. And then if he starts dominating, then the judges will give the fight to him. And there's money on the line, of course, too. So people were just stalling more and trying to get a decision out of it, even though there's no points. So it made the fights really a lot less exciting. And it was a shame, but that's the way it works. If there's any kind of a point system, the fighters will typically stall for those points, even if there's no points and there's just judging. So it was really hard for them to figure out a way to make less draws happen. But the only thing that they came up with was 20 minutes just for a spectator, just for the reason of the spectators being able to watch a predetermined time limit match instead of having to schedule out your whole day for watching Metamoris 3 because you don't know how long the matches are going to go, and trying to make a decisive winner and make exciting fights. So even though there was the 4 fights that went to a draw, they were much more exciting fights.
Okay. And then I thought it was interesting, one of the fights that somebody won, somebody took the fight on 30 minutes notice. What is that like? Like, he was just there probably, like maybe someone's part of a team or something, and like somebody had a staph infection. Like, how, what is it like? Like, I don't think you've ever seen a UFC fighter take a fight on 30 minutes notice.
No, you typically would not see that. That's actually pretty crazy. If you don't know who that was actually someone who did fight in the UFC. He was on The Ultimate Fighter. It was Kevin Casey, kind of famous Hickson black belt. But he came in and stepped in for Vinny Magalhaes, who had a horrible staph infection. They posted pictures on the internet, and it looked pretty nasty. So he had to step in on, yeah, like you said, I think it was 30 minutes notice, which is nuts. The only thing that's good about jiu-jitsu that's different from MMA is that if you mess up, you're probably not going to get your face punched in. You're not going to get any kind of, you know, you're not going to get a bad concussion or something like that. Of course, you run the risk of being submitted and it may be embarrassing or whatever, but and if you tap early, you're probably not going to get hurt. So that's one good thing about jiu-jitsu. You don't have to be – it's not going to endanger your career for taking a fight on such short notice like it would maybe in MMA.
Okay.
So, and then... it was a really weird situation, though. And but, I mean, as long as you're training, even if you're maybe not in perfect tournament shape, if you're training real hard all the time in the gym and someone says, hey, do you want to fight in this match? Maybe you're not mentally prepared, but, you know, physically you're probably not too far off. So
okay.
And then
what are the...
They don't necessarily peak like they do for MMA as much.
What are the weight classes? Because I noticed Hoyler and Eddie had like a 10-pound weight difference. Is that something they agree upon, or how, what is that? Because in MMA, it's like to the ounce.
Yeah, in MMA, it's really... Well, I mean, if you want to look at a more established sport, look at boxing, where it's basically if you sneeze or blow your nose, then you're in a different weight class. So there's a lot of little weight classes because there's so many competitors. And as MMA evolves, there will be more weight classes. And we've seen it with UFC already. There was never, in the beginning, there was no weight classes. Then there was just maybe two, I think, like... maybe up to 190 or something like that, and then 190 and over, something like that. And then now there's a bunch. So, and they've started incorporating even the smaller weight classes, like they have 145, which is never one, 135, and I think they have 125 now, if I'm not mistaken. So as the sport grows, there will be more weight classes, and that changes all the time. Same thing with sport jiu-jitsu. There's a bunch of weight classes right now. There might be more later on. I know they just added one more to the female division for the IBJJF rules for this year, so that's always a good thing. But yeah, the main thing you don't want is you don't want like a huge weight discrepancy. So this one, it was just, it's Metamoris. They don't have to follow any kind of athletic commission rules or anything, I don't think. So they just agreed upon a certain catch weight, or they could be different weights, and it wasn't too bad. And part of it, one of the interesting things was some of the matches that they made were matches that you wouldn't usually see in a tournament setting. So like Clark Gracie versus Hoffa Mendez. Clark Gracie is much bigger than Hoffa, and Hoffa is super dominant in his weight division. There's only one or two people that really give him issues in his weight class. And we've seen those fights over and over again because they're always meeting in the finals for, say, the Worlds and the IBJJF. But Hoffa, unless he fights the open class, would never fight Clark Gracie. So for them to make that match, it kind of makes more sense because, you know, you get to see maybe Clark Gracie is probably like maybe a top five in his weight division. Hoffa's maybe like a top two. One or two, so he's right up there. And getting to see them both fight each other, when people say that maybe he's the best pound for pound, you get to see that put to the test. So I thought that was pretty interesting, and you wouldn't really get to see it elsewhere. So, but a big weight discrepancy there.
John Evan, let me ask you something. What is your next backyard tournament?
My next one? Man, I wanted to have it maybe in the next week or so, but the Abu Dhabi Pro is coming up, and some of the fighters that I wanted to be in this one are going to be competing in Abu Dhabi Pro. I think that's like April 16th or something. So I will be staying up all night watching Abu Dhabi Pro because they live stream it, and they live stream it on their timetable, which is pretty much the opposite of ours here in America. I think the live stream starts at like 10 p.m. or something. So after that, though, that will be a busy weekend. Then maybe the weekend after that, it'll be a good one. I think we're going to have a couple of bigger named grapplers, and they're going to fight for hopefully bigger prize money this time. So should be a good one.
You are now the official jiu-jitsu guy for the Church of What's Happening Now. So you have the power to call in whenever you want and discuss whatever you want. We love you here. That's John. As soon as I thought about you the whole weekend, I'm like, I can't wait to get him on Monday morning. So I'm happy you called in. I'm sorry you had to get up early. I know you like to sleep till about 9:15, but maybe you'll catch the 9 o'clock at Cobrinha's today. There you go. See, I'm inspiring you.
I might do it.
I mean, you have to get in the car now and cut 1,000 motherfuckers off on the 101. It's deep on a fucking Monday going into Hollywood, but I love when you call in, John. You know I'm a fan of yours. How can they find your breakdowns and everything you're involved with jiu-jitsu?
Yeah, so you can go to my YouTube channel. That's where I do all my main video updates. That's just youtube.com/BJJBreakdown. Or you can go to my Facebook page, which is facebook.com/BJJBreakdown as well. I also have BJJBreakdown.com. But I'm redoing the site right now, so it's maybe not quite up to date yet. But
when are you
going to
start? When are you going to start your podcast, John Evan? You need to get out there. I need to hear you more.
If jiu-jitsu gets more popular, especially with events like this that are great and more accessible to the average person, I'd love to start one, as long as there's a listener base out there that'd like to listen.
So, I'm telling you, you're knowledgeable, so if you build it, they'll come. Trust me, my brother.
that's the goal. Hopefully, with all these tournaments and everything, people get more into it. It's some of the most talented athletes out there are in jiu-jitsu, and it's a really hard sport, and it's a little bit discouraging to see some of the most amazing technicians you've seen out there that can barely scrape together to make ends meet. So hopefully get some more money into the sport and help these guys a little bit.
That's what they're trying to do, brother. Thank you very much for calling. I'll call you later on.
Oh, definitely. Say hello. Thank you guys so much.
Thank you, John
Evan.
It's always a pleasure for you to call, man. Like I said, you're the new correspondent for the Church of What's Happening Now, the Jiu-Jitsu division. So all you got to do is text me and say, Joey, I want to call up today. I want to talk about something. Your family, you're good. All right, brother?
Awesome, man. Thank you.
Thank you, John Evan. Have a great day. That was great. You know,
yeah.
Hey, listen, man. Kindred soul. You know, Eddie gets tortured. Eddie gets a lot of shit from people, and a lot of people would quit. Don't ever fucking quit, man. Like I said, it only hurts for as long as you let it. You fucking move on, and that's your gasoline. That's it. I want to give some shout outs to some bad motherfuckers today. My main man, Don Sal Zarulo, Sergio Andahar, Talking Lair, Ernesto Salazar, John Rollo, the Teflon Jew, Samuels, my man Nelia Samuels, my man Water Boxer, anybody who came to the Fort Lauderdale Improv this weekend, my man Oscar Nunez, Oscar Hernandez, I love you motherfuckers, my man Brock, a lot of people came out, I met a lot of cool people. I met this black Lee Syed fan with a gold tooth who caught me outside and was like, man, I dig you. But my main nigga is Lee, the fucking Flying Jew. Where's the Flying Jew at? That's my nigga. He must have told me that 15 fucking times. Man, I'm happy you're here, but man, I see that motherfucker grow and shit. I seen him grow. I was like, I wish I would have got his name. I would have fucking had him call in. He was hilarious. Gold Tooth, the chick that wouldn't say nothing. She was like kind of scared that he might beat her and shit. Right there in public.
Well, if you're listening, email me at flyingjewradio@gmail.com.
I want you to talk to him. I want to give a shout out to my fucking sponsors. Hulu Plus, as usual, fucking making it happen. $7.99 a month. Watch all shows whenever the fuck you want, on whatever device you want. Your phone, your tablet, your whatever, your fucking hand. I don't give a fuck if you stick a plug in your ear and watch it on your fucking hand. That's how Hulu Plus goes. Go to HuluPlus.com or go to JoeyDiaz.net. Go to HuluPlus.com, box and press in.
Joey.
Boom! Get 2 weeks for free. If you just go to Hulu.com, you get Ugats for free. You get 1 week. I'm giving you a deuce plus $7.99 a month. That's $96 a year for fucking entertainment. $100 a year out of the fucking whatever money you make. I'm not asking you for much. Go to HuluPlus.com and press in
Joey.
And get your fucking party started, bitches. That's how we roll. Honor.com, I can't thank you enough. I can't thank you for what you've done for me. Your products, you know, whenever I contact you, you send me my Alpha Brain. You know, I just finished the one Alpha Brain cycle. I'm going to start another one in about 3 weeks. The Shroom Tech, I'll be taking it tonight for jiu-jitsu. I mean, I believe in this shit, folks. And it's helped me. The Shroom Tech Sport has helped me with my endurance. That's the one that I'm really, if all their products are as good as Shroom Tech Sport, then we got something fucking special here. They have the Digestive, the enzymes. They've got the fucking Hemp Force protein, which is sensational. We were talking about it last night on the Eddie Bravo podcast. Go to onnit.com. Go to joeydiaz.net. On the Onnit, press what?
Church.
Church. C-H-U-R-C-H. Booyah! And there you have that, all right? Also, to my fucking great friends at Dollar Motherfucking Shave Club, making it happen again. I got home today. There was a thing of fucking razors right there. It's not even the fucking first. They're better than welfare. You understand? They're better than fucking welfare. It gets to your house. Onnit also has the program. You can stay on it. You get 20% off. They mail everything to your house the first of the month. Dollar Shave Club does that. A nice razor, some fucking four blades. Let's say you want to wipe your asshole. The one white Charlie's.
Oh, yeah.
The cocoa butter shave. Dollar Shave Club. Don't fuck around. Go to Dollar Shave Box and Press.
Church.
Church. When you go to joeydiaz.net. Also, my brothers are escapepod.tank. I love Jeremy.
Escape Pod Tank.
Escape Pod Tank. What did I say? Escapepodtank.com.
Yeah, you added a dot.
I know. I'm sorry. I'm stuttering. I drink some fucking water here. Jeremy will always answer the 1-800 number. Go to their webpage. Escapepodtank.com. Go to the 1-800 number, call them if you have any questions. I'll tell you what, they're a leader in the industry. They have the industrial ones. They have the ones for your fucking house. They have the ones for your backyard. You could jump in there, scrub your nuts, close the hatch. Whatever the fuck you want to do, you could do with escapepodtank.com. Go over there, tell them we sent you, get $250 off. If you live somewhere, they'll deliver it. Listen, they're nice fucking guys. This is what you want to do business with. Not only that, I'm going to save you $2,000 on a fucking tank. There you have it. Plus the $250 and buy a t-shirt. That's what you need to fucking do, all right? And that's it. We got a beautiful fucking day to be alive. It's going to be 60 degrees. I'm tired today.
Oh, yeah.
I think I'm going to go to kettlebell class tonight. Or just go to jiu-jitsu tonight because it's Marcel Madness at VMAC tonight.
Uh-oh.
For the first half hour, he makes you do jumping jacks and fucking burpees and fucking push-ups. I can't do burpees. I can't do the hill climbers. I try them, you know, but I'm working every day, man. I'm trying to fucking do this every day. This weekend I ran 2 days. I rode the bike.
Inside or outside? Because outside must have been
inside, there. Inside. Yeah. No, it wasn't that bad. It wasn't that humid. Okay. It was cloudy. It wasn't sunny at all. It was cloudy all fucking 3 days. I rode the bike for the first time because my knee was bothering me.
Oh, fuck.
So I wanted to really give it some mobility. So I rode the bike both days for 20 minutes. Then I got on the treadmill and did the Dolce diet for 40 minutes. So it's a 60 minute of cardio. You know, I burned some calories. My shirts were fucking sweaty as fuck. They smelt. But, you know, you run. What the Dolce thing is, you walk the first 5 minutes on like 3.5. And then after that, every 2 minutes, you jog or you sprint for 30 seconds. And then you walk 2 minutes. So it's not bad. You recover. You put an album on your iPod. Just put the album on because it's gonna take you 30 minutes, and you just you walk for the first five. Then you fuck around with it. Sometimes I put it all the way up to like 6.5, and I only sprint for 15 seconds, but then I'll rest for a minute and 45 seconds. So you can play around with it. You know, I do it for like jiu-jitsu to get out of you're on the bottom and you want to fucking a hip escape and then put them back in your guard. So that's all I'm doing with that little running thing. But it was Mike Dolce who invented it. I didn't invent it. I just modified it a little bit like Eddie Bravo modified jiu-jitsu. So I did that. So today I was going to take Sunday and go back at it today, but I'm just physically tired today. I think I'm going to go back and have breakfast with the family and maybe do that and maybe just fuck around and write and do all that stuff. What do you got planned out, Cocklicker? You got a podcast?
Got a podcast. I got the Red Sox coming.
What time the Red Sox?
Opening days at noon.
Oh, shit.
I was going to go down to the Boston Bar
and Santa. Let's eat the fucking Goomy Bear.
Okay.
Let's eat the fucking
Goomy. I was going to go to the Boston Bar in Santa Monica, but
Check it out. We got a fucking Green Hornet. Lee's going to. It's Monday. the March 30th. That's how we're starting this motherfucker off.
Yeah.
Line up Bush, The Sound of Winter. Eddie played it last night. Now it's been on my mind all fucking morning.
This is going to be interesting, flying to radio on a podcast, on an edible.
Delicious today. They do a good job with these fucking green hornets. I'll tell you that much. Not only that, they fuck you up, too.
Yeah.
Mm-mm-mm. Just like mama used to be, huh?
I don't know how you... I like that so much more than anything chocolate-based. I can't do that, but that's yummy.
You don't like the chocolate-based? Nah. Second. Nah. This week we're doing a special podcast Wednesday at 1 o'clock. I got a special guest for you motherfuckers. I just need him to confirm. And that's it. We got a great week coming. Next week, this Thursday, I'm at the Tempe Improv. But next week, I'm in Grand motherfucking Rapids, Michigan, bitches. Break out the dirty white women with dirty feet. I love it. I love Michigan. I love Tempe. I can't wait to see you motherfuckers this weekend. Besides that, that's it.
Yeah. If you have a second, go to leesai.com. Everything I do is there. I appreciate it.
Okay. No, and also, for you motherfuckers asking, you ready? The coffee cups are in. The t-shirts are in. All I'm waiting on is the ghee patches. And after that, the store will be open. My wife is going to open the store this week for pre-order, like Lee did with his t-shirts. We'll be sending them out next week. We got short sleeve Churchill What's Happening Now t-shirts and long sleeve Churchill What's Happening Now t-shirts that I've been selling on the road when the sleeve says the Flying Jew. You know what I'm saying? You got a pussy, a cock with balls, and a crucifix on your fucking shirt. What else do you need? If that don't get you started, nothing's going to get you started. I love you motherfuckers from the Church of What's Happening Now. Have a great day. I want to thank all my sponsors again. HuluPlus.com, Onnit, EscapePodTank.com, and Dollar Shave Club. I love you guys. Have a great fucking day. Have a great Monday. Remember, fuck them all up the ass. Don't give a fuck what they got to say. You're the Captain Kirk of the Enterprise. You're the motherfucker that goes to ShopRite or Panty Pride or fucking Albertsons and pays for your own groceries. And if you got something to say, tell them to suck your dick and call you shorty. You were born in 1940. You ain't taking nut from nobody today. You're going to be the best motherfucker you could be. Fuck the national anthem today. This is your own personal anthem. This is the personal anthem you're playing in your fucking head every morning when you wake up. Today they're going to suck my... All these people with their positive reaffirmings. I am who I am. You know, I'm confident. Go fuck yourself. You're a bad motherfucker. You got to say that to yourself in the morning with one eye shut so it focuses into your fucking brain like Popeye with one fucking eye. Look at yourself and go, I'm a bad motherfucker. Nobody's going to fuck with me today. Somebody's going to suck my dick today. Somebody's going to fucking pay me today. And today I'm going to be a lot better than I was fucking yesterday. The church of what's happening now. I love you motherfuckers. Stay black. Go out there. Mug somebody. Hit it, Lee, you bad motherfucker.
Now that the show's over, don't forget to sign up for your free trial of Hulu Plus.
Stopping us, fucking Jeff, fucking pussy motherfucker.
Let you bend thousands of hit shows anytime, talking anywhere. About me. On your TV, PC, smartphone, or tablet. Support this podcast and get an extended free trial of Hulu Plus when you go to HuluPlus.com/Joey or go to JoeyDiaz.net and click on the Hulu Plus banner. And don't forget to sign up for DollarShaveClub.com. Get high-quality razors sent to your door each and every month for a fraction of what you pay at retail. Go to DollarShaveClub.com/church or go to JoeyDiaz.net and click on the Dollar Shave Club banner. And huge thanks to EscapePodTank.com. Go there and get your sensory deprivation tank.
Don't wanna leave. Like a sound.